So, welcome to Forosin Noir. We have a guest today. We have a different show than we do normally. Normally we have a lot of music and have some interviews in the show. Today we will have the major phase of the show is going to be this interview. Not an interview, actually a talk. We want to discuss about Forró in Europe, Forró in Brazil, Forró in the world with Rafael Barré. Very welcome here in the studio.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Fabi. I'm very happy to be here.
You've been around in Freiburg for already quite a long time. As long as I know Forró, you've been here. But maybe not all the audience knows you. So maybe you could introduce yourself, like where you're coming from. How did you get in touch with Forró? Start from the basics.
Mm-hmm. Originally, I'm from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. And my contact with Forró came after my studies in dances that are not considered embrace dances. That is, dances that you dance in couple. After passing by breakdance, classical ballet, contemporary dance, I got in touch with maybe the biggest dance master in Brazil ever, Maria Antonieta, who taught great artists, great known teachers how to dance, like Carlinhos de Jesus and Jaime Arocha. And I was in a very bad moment in my life, and I met her, and I said, I would like to learn how to dance. And she said, but do you dance already something? And I said, no, I don't dance anything. I just dance individual or collective dances, like break, ballet, and so on. But no couple dances, no embrace dances. And we were in Estudantina Musical, where in those times used to have a ballroom dance evening, or sometimes even more during the week, two or three times a week. And she just got me and said, let's dance. And I said, but master, I don't know how to dance. And she said, but let's dance anyway. And we did three steps, more or less. Like I embraced, I tried to walk. And she said, yeah, you don't know how to dance. Come to my house tomorrow to take classes. And she didn't dance anymore with me.
And when was that? Like what age?
That was 2001. Mm-hmm. 2001. And so I went to her house and I told her, the only thing I have ever seen in my life, but I never took classes, I just frequent, is Forró. But I believe that this is not what you teach. And she said, yeah, I also teach that, but we are going to focus on other things, rhythms that are not so known and so on. And in that moment, I noticed that I wanted to learn also how to dance Forró, because I was frequenting, I was going, but just like people do in Brazil, not taking classes. We do not have at least at those times, we didn't have the culture of taking classes in Forró. People just go in mm-hmm. Brazil. It's different from Europe, unfortunately. And I decided to really take classes, to really learn the dance and to really improve in my dance. In that moment, I found a guy, maybe the most famous dancer in that moment, Davi Santos, known by the nickname of Mico Preto. And he was dancing in a very known Forró in those times. It doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, Malagueta. And I told him, I'm interested in learning because I just come and dance, but I want to really study. And he said, that's a huge coincidence. Next week, I'm starting a group in the south area of Rio de Janeiro called Botafogo. And I say, wow, that's super close to my house. He gave me a card. I started taking classes. And after a few months, we had our first Forró company in Rio de Janeiro founded.
The first company
at all. The first, because I don't want to enter in polemics, but sometimes this happens because people, I don't know what they have in their heads. They want to say things that do not happen. Marinho Braz also found a Forró company, but it was just right after the foundation of this one. He had a group with who he was working and so on, students that were like his preferred students, but it was not exactly a group still, mm-hmm. professional group. Ours was the first. And so the whole story started.
But professional group means giving classes professionally.
We were giving classes.
Or doing as well shows.
We were giving classes. We were doing shows, recording clips with famous bands, participating on TV shows and so on, traveling to give shows in other cities. Because in that time, Forró was in the moment of the boom. The great boom in Forró, from my perspective, from what I've seen, I started frequenting Forró in 1998, even if I was not taking classes. The impression that I had is the biggest boom of the Forró was in the Brazilian summer of 1999-2000. That is, in this moment, December 1999, January 2000, started the big boom. And it lasted, in my opinion, until 2002. 2003 when it started falling a little but kept alive.
And which bands were like the most famous in this time, which were like, or was it, it was probably driven through the music, right?
We were, so to say, more interested, at least in Rio de Janeiro and in São Paulo, in Fala Mansa, Rastapé, and right in that moment appeared Forró Sacana as well. Okay. These were maybe the three biggest names in that moment. Also because it's very important to be said, in those times, we very, very young people, some of us still in at the school, the first contact that we had with Forró was through the media, because Forró was having his boom. So it's not that we started going to Forró because we were from, I don't know, a culture that values the origins. We want Luis Gonzaga, we want the roots of Forró, the beginning. No, 99% of us were attracted to Forró by the media groups. So they played a very important role on that. If nowadays I like the classics, I DJ the classics when I'm DJing, and I value a lot their music, without underestimating and under-evaluating the moderns, because this is something that I don't like. I believe we have to value all of them, and they can be all together. My begin was through the known ones, the media ones, so to say. And this was the beginning of 99% of the people.
Okay, so this is 2001, 2002, you're starting the first company. What happened then?
We started giving classes, and it was a boom. I can tell you that we had around 5 or 6 Forró classes a week with 30, 40, 45 students sometimes. This is what was happening. We would do an audience to bring new dancers to the company, and hundreds of people would appear. Many, many people would appear interested in doing that, even if it was really the beginning for some of them.
So an audience means they will come and say, I will apply for being in the school, and then you choose who you take.
Exactly. They wanted to be part of the company, not taking classes. They wanted to be part of the company to dance with us and do shows, and we would do like audiences, paying attention to their capacities, their physical shapes to fit with the dancers and so on. This was more or less what was happening at that time.
Okay. Then, I don't know, how did it develop? How long did you stick to Forró? I remember when you got here, I remember, okay, he knows dancing Forró, but you were really into tango. How did you get here anyway?
I came to Germany because I wanted to write my PhD. I was in doubt where to go because in philosophy, my graduations are philosophy and social sciences. In this area, the most respected diplomas in Brazil are the European ones, if you want to do a PhD. And in philosophy, especially if you do it in France and in Germany, they are very respected. My doubts were where to go. I wanted already to come to Germany because in 2007, I was in Freiburg to take a German course for 3 months. And I liked the city. I found it small, cozy, clean. I liked it. And that was already bringing me to Germany, but I was in doubt because I also loved France and so on. But then I started applying, sending applications for the Dr. Vater, as we say in Germany, and the director of my thesis. And some accepted, some didn't. And from the ones that accepted, I was interested, more interested, so to say, in the work of two teachers in Germany, one in Heidelberg and one in Freiburg. As the one in Heidelberg seemed to me to be extremely arrogant, much more than what I could take, I decided to come to Freiburg because I already knew the city. I already had, I don't know, liked when I was here. And not only that, when I was in doubt between France, England, Italy, and so on, I considered I already speak these idioms. And German, even if I took a course, I cannot speak. It's very difficult. It's the most challenging one. So it's also a way to improve my German. So this is the way I got here, to write my PhD originally. But as dance is in my life since I was 8 years old, it's a passion for me much more than a work. I said, I don't want to quit on doing dance. I love dancing. And from the embrace ones, as you just mentioned, tango was one of my favorites. Tango, Forró, and Lindy Hop were my favorite ones. And I said, I don't want to stop dancing. This is what I know. So I'm going to arrive there and I'm going to look for Forró, tango, and Lindy Hop. This is what I'm going to do. But not necessarily to teach. To dance, because my aim was to keep with dance as a passion. I had worked in Brazil for a long while, but I had a huge trauma when my group dissoluted and separated because of the things that happened. So I was always very so to say, skeptical to start teaching again. I would do informal stuff, informal private classes sometimes, but not regularly teaching officially as like my profession officially. But as soon as I arrived, it was funny because I arrived in a Wednesday. And I arrived and the first thing that I did was I typed Forró in Freiburg. And in that evening, there was a party happening where today we have the sushi Oishi in Kaiser Josef and Dreisam. Uh-huh. There was a party happening there. I arrived and I saw the introductory course, the Schnupperkurs that they were giving.
It was a Laubfrosch, right? Back then. Laubfrosch?
I don't remember the name of the place, but anyway. But it was there. And I arrived at the time of the Schnupperkurs, the introductory class. I didn't know the schedule. I just arrived and I saw. And when I saw the guy who was teaching, I mean, I don't know him. I never saw him in my life. But when I saw him teaching, the first impression that I had is if he's the teacher in the city needs a teacher. Because he was just a guy that likes to dance and wanted to promote Forró here together with the others who were organizing. But he had no clue on how to teach. So I said, this city needs a teacher. If this is the representing one, this city needs a teacher. And so I started talking to the people who organized the party, Cristiana Menezes and other Brazilians. And they said, we totally need a teacher because he's just doing, because he's nice. I mean, to help
because
people.
Because nobody else is there.
Exactly. There's no one, so he does.
When year was that? 2007, you came
there
for
the classes. There was 2011.
2011,
okay. That was 2011. And it's funny because since then I said, okay, I'm going to start giving classes. I wanted to teach Forró and I wanted to teach Tango. These are the ones that I wanted to teach. I don't want to work with Lindy Hop now. Where can I teach? And since then started my odyssey looking for a room in Freiburg. For those who do not know Freiburg, I can tell you, if you want to come here to teach, plan yourself 10 years in advance because it's impossible to find a room to teach. It's so difficult. I spent more than 2 years until I found one.
And 2011 you got here.
Exactly. October, November 2011.
Okay. And then I think 2011 or 2012 was the first Little Forró Festival, right?
Exactly, the one in which we had 50 people.
Yeah, in the Freie Schule, right?
Exactly,
And you've been there already as well.
I was there as well.
Because back then I have not been here. I've been in Freiburg, but I didn't know what Forró is yet.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it took some while until you really started. Well, let's keep to the tango, because I've seen you've been more into tango when you were here. Like, Forró was...
Maybe
the tango scene was way bigger, so you had more opportunity to dance tango, maybe.
I was going more to tango to dance for the simple reason that in Freiburg, you can dance tango from Monday to Monday. And back then, you could not dance Forró, not even once a week. Maybe once a month if you were lucky. So of course I was dancing more tango, but I would like to use the opportunity that this is going to be listened by many people to say something very clear. I don't know who started with that. I don't want even to identify because I know some people who did it, but it's very important to tell something. One of these things I said already in my introduction, but now I'm going to tell you another. Not only I am not Argentinian, because many people think that I'm Argentinian and many people say with bad intentions that I'm Argentinian, and I'm not a tango teacher that is teaching Forró. Because before starting tango, I had a dance company, a Forró dance company in Brazil, and I had been dancing Forró for more than 3 years. So if I would have to say something, I am more a Forró dance teacher teaching tango. But it's not the case, because I have also lived in Argentina, I have studied deeply tango, and nowadays I consider myself capable of teaching them in the same level, a nice level, a good level, a professional level. And this story with he's a tango teacher, he's a tango dancer teaching Forró and so on, started maybe because my way of dancing, in which I value a lot the posture, the healthy way of dancing, the quality, the technique and so on. And this is something that is not so valued in Europe. Forró in Europe is sold as an easy dance, as joy, as it's okay as long as you have fun. And this is not the way I work with it. This is a myth that was created around Forró. Forró is easy. And in my classes, in my small area of influence, I try to show people that it's not like that.
But then let's try to get to nail it down. Like, what is Forró? Like, from my... I've just recently wrote an article. You read it and gave some comments. Forró, like we dance today, I think you one of your comments was Forró in the Northeast before the 90s wasn't really a dance. People went to a party and moved. but it was not really a dance. So where did Fohar, like, where was Fohar born, and what is, what are the characteristics of Fohar for you?
It's interesting that you ask me that, because there was a festival in Copenhagen more or less 1 month ago, and teaching there, they asked me to give a lecture about the history of Fohar. And I told them, I'm going to do something that is not exactly what people are expecting, because people expect you, when you talk about the history of Fohar, to talk about Luis Gonzaga and come until nowadays. So that means you would start around the 30s, 1930, or something like that, 35, 32, 34, and then you come up today. But then people forget that 50 years before, already in the 19th century, the end of the 19th century, the last quarter, we had already Fohar. But not at all Fohar as we know nowadays. Even Fohar in the time of Luis Gonzaga was not the Fohar that we know nowadays. But in this very beginning, in the end of the slavery in Brazil, and in the beginning of the independence, so to say, of the slaves, there were already parties. Parties, if we can say that. They were more meetings, and people who would go to a Fohar, as it was called in those days, would go also to many other meetings and parties with thousands of other names. And it was not like clear, this is the Fohar public, this is this kind of public. No, because this didn't exist. These meetings were like more a shout for independence, for freedom, for let me be myself, let us be ourselves, than a party where you go, you listen to Xote, Xaxado, Baião, Galope, there is a band playing, Triângulo, Sanfona and Zabumba, and many people dancing with skirts, moleca and t-shirt. No, it was absolutely not like that. It was totally different. There was no dressing code in that moment. There was not a dance specifically, even if we, when we study, we discovered that, for example, Xote come from European dances, from dances of the court, of the noblesse. And we know that it influenced the Xote that we dance in Fohar. But in those times, it really didn't exist a dance. And I always say something that is like a myth or a joke, but it's really, really, really in this direction that things started. People were going to these meetings to get together, sometimes play together, but there was not a specific dance. And the dance appeared in the very first moment that a man was interested in a woman, because just playing was not enough. He needed to get close to her. So somehow he needed to get close. The only way he found to get close was, man, I have to do something. I'm going to invite this woman to dance. So he gets close to her and he says, would you like to dance? And she looks to him like totally surprised and at the same time shocked, and she says, but dance what? And then it happened what happens everywhere, and I see it a lot in Europe and in Germany. The guy tells her, I show you, don't worry, I teach you. But there was nothing to be showed, there was nothing to be taught, because there was not a specific dance, there was not a code, there was not a way of dancing that people learned. So the guy just started doing what we call in Brazil, relar o bucho, that is, to, in German we would say reiben, or in English we would say the guy starts to, I don't know, to...
Actually rub exists as
rub,
well, no?
You know, rub he himself. Wants to rubber her. Oh. This is what happened, but there was not a specific dance. This is something that came much later. And we have all this period until Luis Gonzaga appeared with the preparation of the independence of the slaves, the constitution of a place, because there was not a specific place. It's not like nowadays that there is a party place, a specific place where people were dancing. The codes that started being generated little by little, dressing codes that appeared lately. And this all collaborated a lot for the appearance of Luis Gonzaga and for what Luis Gonzaga did afterwards.
What I remember from the movie, it's again a movie, who knows what is real there, O Pai do Pau Filho, that the father of Luis Gonzaga, Januário, he was playing at like balls, which are basically more, were organized more or less by the fazendeiros to make some whatever gatherings and have whatever São João festas like regularly a year, and he was playing there. And
yes, Januário used to play, but he didn't play sanfonas. He played a cousin of the sanfona, the Oito Baixos. This was his specialty. He knew as well how to play sanfona, but he was, like to say, more involved and he liked more to play with the Oito Baixos. That was what he was doing more.
It is so more accessible, no? Oito Baixos, isn't it a cheaper instrument?
It's more accessible financially, but it's also somehow, I don't want to depreciate the instrument, not at all, but it's also more accessible from the playing point of view, because it says in the name, Oito baixos. I mean, it's a very simple. A complete sanfona, for example, the ones that Luis Gonzaga used to play, they have generally 120 baixos. Uh-huh. So it's a bit more complex, so to say.
Okay, so we had this like history before Luis Gonzaga, but then we still don't have any dance. Where does the dance emerge?
I think the dance emerges more or less in the time of Luis Gonzaga. I think it appears little by little in the time of Luis Gonzaga. It's very difficult once we are treating with something that comes from a very poor culture, from people who had no access to education, books, and so on, and even less to the media, to talk about registers. Né? Sometimes I like to make a parallel, and I did that in my lecture in Copenhagen, between the forró and the Greek philosophy, because one of my areas, my preferred areas in philosophy is the Greek philosophy. When you study them, you notice that sometimes it's difficult to build the pieces. You have like a puzzle and you cannot fit everything because there are pieces that are missing. You cannot simply find out a very linear and structured interpretation. And the same thing happens sometimes in forró, because in the very beginnings there was no register. There was no one thinking, we are doing history here. This is going to be seen in 100 years and super valued in Europe, and there will be festivals. They didn't have a clue of the importance that would have for the Brazilian culture, the Brazilian history, and the influence that would have in Europe. So we simply do not have registers. It's very difficult to find the first register of a ball dance for forró, or the first dance teacher, for example, or the first time people really danced. But I would say it was in the time of Luis Gonzaga's gold age, when he was really famous, that people really started dancing.
So and in the end of the 40s and the 50s.
I would say so. But that doesn't mean, let's make it clear, that no one absolutely danced before.
Yeah,
what we are seeing is that it became like more official, that people would practice something, dancing, in those times.
Yeah, and as soon as you have more experienced dancers, others will ask them, so there will be sort of something like classes. Okay, so yeah, my point is not really to have to say this one was the first one, or it started in whatever, Botafogo, or so, let's say. The question is more, there are, like, forró has not entered in dance schools, or big dance schools in Europe, let's say. Or, for example, Gutmann here is dance, teaches a lot of dances, but forró has not entered yet. I don't know. If you go to this big dance school, I've never been there, really, so I'm just guessing, or what I heard, is that, for example, in salsa or in tango, you have, like, steps you learn from, there's like a book or a guideline or something, and you have figure number blah 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 and number X, and then you teach that and everyone knows what the figure is. It's not really so much to lead, or because everyone knows already which figure it's going to be. In forró, there's nothing alike, I think. So still the question remains, what is forró in the end? If you say, okay, salsa is defined by maybe by many people, but there are certain definitions, you can look it up, there are books, blah blah blah, about the dance. So what is forró for you? If you say it's not enough to say have fun with the forró music, we can come back later to what is forró music, actually. Mm-hmm. But let's keep to the dance first.
Of course. First, let's start with the dance school stuff. I can talk more about Germany because I've been living here. Even if I have lived in Italy or in Spain, I prefer to talk about Germany because I've been living here for a while and I have some experience with the culture here. I believe that forró is still not in the dance schools here, not because the lack of steps or because there is not a block of classes to be taught. I believe that it's just because forró is still a kid in Europe. It's still very unknown. Even if we have a huge evolution in the last 4 years, coming from 2013 with 6 festivals in that year to 2016, in which we're going to have more than 30, it's a huge multiplication. It's still a kid, it's still unknown. No one knows what is forró. You talk about forró with people that do not dance forró and they don't even say, I have heard of it. It's very rare that someone says, I have heard of it already. If he has heard, he's taking classes. Because this is one of the effects of forró, different from other dances, is addictive. Once people get in, they just don't want to leave. It's very difficult to leave it. It's very difficult. It's an addiction.
Or your flatmate is listening to forró all day long.
Or something like that. But it's not only that. I believe that we are still not in those big dance schools because those big dance schools, they have a name that, in my opinion, it's still not happening in forró, or if it is happening, it still didn't cover everything, and it didn't influence it in a way that there is no way around. In those schools, my experience in Germany tells me people don't go to dance. In those big schools in Germany where they go to take dance classes, people go to meet people, to lose weight, to treat it as a gymnastic, to treat a specific trauma of interaction, of being shy, or so on, but no one is going to dance. And I believe, from the experience that I have with the big schools, that they are not interested in dance. They go there for some other reason. And the people at the school have identified that, maybe. Mm-hmm. And this is the reason why the dance courses offered in the big dance schools are just repeating, and copying like a robot figures and doing something mechanical, just like a gymnastic. Dance is a gymnastic in Germany. It's very difficult to talk about connection, posture, interaction with the other, because people don't even look at the other when they are dancing. Not even look. As soon as you embrace, first of all, you have a huge distance, physical and spiritual, energetical. Then you're not even looking at the person. You look at somewhere else. And this shows already a little bit in which way the dance is going here. And maybe this, through this point, we can build the bridge to what characterizes Forró. Maybe other dances have this characteristic as well. But I believe that one of the things that could characterize Forró is this integration between the dancers. The couple integrates when they are dancing. Or at least I try to teach that in my classes. And I try to pay attention to that when I see people dancing. And maybe one end up seeing that because he wants to see that. Maybe it's not happening. But what I see in Forró a little is that people try to integrate. They try to really connect with each other. Even if, as I told you, there is also a tendency inside of Forró of doing steps, choreographical movements, figures, or whatever people want to call. And this makes, in the end, that the student is only a shadow of his teacher, of his master. He is only a bad copy of the teacher, because people are not being taught to dance. They are being taught to repeat figures just like the teacher. And what happens in the end? You arrive to a festival, you look at the dancers, and you say, this one has learned at A, for sure. Mm-hmm. That one, no, he learned from B. Teacher B is his teacher, I'm sure. Because you see immediately that people are, so to say, they belong to a specific teacher, to a specific school, to a specific dance direction, style, or whatever people want to say. And this is something that I find sad, because the aim is not that people copy. The aim is that people find their own colors, their own taste, their own way. I mean, you give tools and they build their own dance. You don't give them the dance. You give them the tools.
Yeah, but in the end, it's all about, like, if you have one specific teacher, then you will have, it's not about copying, but he will pay attention to certain things, so you will pay attention to these things as well, and you will certainly be identified, or it will be, for example, if you teach your classes, it's important to have a good posture, to have a good embrace, people will notice that as well if they pay attention, like if the students pay attention to what you say, and if the observers have pay attention to how the people dance. I think that's not the point, but repeating things is not the objective, that's very clear.
I totally agree with what you say, Fabio, but I would make a remark to that. If you take the people who learned from me officially, were my students, or non-officially, were influenced by my dance, were influenced by my group in Brazil, by what we did in Rio de Janeiro, you will see that they dance completely, completely different from each other. I just give you three examples of teachers who are maybe known in Europe because they have been teaching in festivals. Ricardo Ambrosio, Marquinhos do Forró, Miguel Gomes Bezerra. They all learned or were influenced or learned from people who learned with me or learned from my group or were influenced by my group somehow. And these three people, they cannot dance more different than the other. They dance totally different from each other because they built their own dances. You get my students in Freiburg, the ones that are learning with me, and they go to the festival, and no one can say that they are my students, because they don't dance alike. You don't see people like moving the same way. I have students with who people like to dance in festivals, and they dance totally different. For example, I see a person telling me, I love dancing with A. your student, but I don't like that much dancing with B, and B is also my student, because they dance totally different. They got the material and they put it into their bodies doing their own way. I will never tell them how the shape of their dance have to be. I will tell them what is healthy. Now, this is something that I also say a lot in my classes. I'm not here to teach a style because I don't even believe in styles. This is something we can talk about later. I'm not here to teach you how to dance like me because I don't want you to dance like me. I want you to dance like you. And then you will be dancing like me. Now, to make a parallel to Nietzsche's thought, you want to be like me, then be yourself. And you notice that people go in different ways and in different lines, even if they were my students. And this is something that I like a lot.
Yeah, I think that's very important, that people discover what they feel good in the dance. But let's try... Okay, one definition of Forró we found is the connection or the interaction, the integration within the couples. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't say there are sort of movements who don't fit in Forró, like specific turns you can't do or stuff. It's more or less all value.
I believe, honestly, that due to Forró's dance history, it's impossible to say that there is a motion that does not fit in Forró, for the simple reason that there is no motion that fits into Forró. That there is no motion that this is Forró motion. We, let's say it clear with all the letters, we, Forró, were born stealing. We stole from many dances. Many. Bolero, swing, lambada, whatever you want that has turns or these kind of motions, we stole from them. There is nothing that one can say, this is Forró. And this is the reason why, also connecting with the styles stuff, that I don't like when people come with this story of roots, the original Forró, this is the real Forró, and so on. Whenever someone says that, I say, really, show me what is the real Forró. Show me what belongs to the real Forró, because there is no real Forró. We were born stealing. We were born taking things from other dances and putting them into Forró for the simple reason that we did not have anything in the beginning. Anything. It was not a dance that was born with its own characteristics, with its own motions, like, for example, tango or Lindy Hop. No, we were not born like that. So I think it's absolutely legitimate when we want to put things into Forró or to invent things into Forró. It's just a matter of taste, security, healthiness, paying attention to what you are doing on the dance floor, on the show, on the stage when you are doing a show. And as I said, it's a matter of taste. And taste is something that you can always discuss and say, this is good, this is not, this looks nice, this doesn't look. I will always give my opinion and try to fundament it. Why I like this, why I do not like that. But somehow it's good, we do not have a Forró Bible that says this is like this, and if you don't do it, you go to hell. And I think it's good somehow that we do not have it.
But I totally agree.
But that doesn't mean at the same time, do whatever and it's okay. It's Forró is amazing and don't care, just do it. I don't think it's that the way.
Okay, but what we've heard so far is do whatever, but do it together, and then it's Forró. To be polemic.
Oh man, you are putting me into polemics. I already have so many in Europe. Oh my God. But I don't mind. The main thing is to be honest, and if it generates more polemics, I don't care, honestly. The most important thing is to be honest. I don't think that it's just a matter of as long as it's done in a couple, it is Forró. I don't believe it's that, because there are many things, many, many things that I see on the dance floor and I say, okay, he's dancing to Forró music, but that doesn't mean that he's dancing Forró. He's just doing whatever, really whatever, without any concerns, so to say. I think it's also a matter of concern. It's very difficult to trace a line and say, this you can, this you cannot. As I said, it's a matter of taste. But we also have to pay some attention. Forró is a couple dance. It's something that you want to interact. So it doesn't make much sense to roll on the floor, to jump around and crash on other people. Because you are not only dancing, if you want to be really strict, you are not only dancing with your couple. You are dancing with everyone on the dance floor.
And with the musicians
or with the DJ. And once I saw an interview of a teacher I'm not going to identify him because from polemics I have enough. And he said in the interview, Forró is just about you, your partner, and nothing else matters. That's it. It's you two and whatever. Nothing else matters. And I don't think that nothing else matters, because if nothing else matters, I will do whatever I want on the dance floor and I will bother people. I will crash. I will be totally not friends with the music, which is something that I think it's very important to establish a relationship with the music, to establish a friendly relationship with the music. And this is something that people do not care. So they hide themselves behind the mask of it's my interpretation. It's my individual musicality. It's my particular way of understanding it. In my opinion, this is a lie. This is just fooling people around. It's not a particular interpretation. It's really the person doesn't understand anything of what's going on the music and cannot interpret it.
Mm-hmm. Let's come back to the styles thing. So mm-hmm. You said you don't. I don't know what you.
I don't believe
literally
in styles.
You believe in. You don't believe, don't believe in styles. What is a style for you in the first place? In order to
style for me, as I said, is nothing. I don't believe it. But what people believe and what is becoming like a form or a formula in Europe is that styles have to do with the steps that you do, the way you move, the way you embrace. And so people come with Itaúna's style, Pé Descalço style. People have already said that I have tango style, and things that show a completely lack of knowledge, in my opinion, on what concerns forró. And why I do not believe in styles? Because I believe there is only one style, forró. And people are doing what they believe they have to do listening to that music. Either you are doing more turns, either you are dancing with the partner without opening much the embrace and without doing turns and just doing footwork, like people say, not playing with the legs, playing with the feet, or doing the basic step in a specific way. But in my opinion, we have to unite, not to separate. It's all forró. What we are dancing is forró. If we start doing this, we will have in the future, I don't know, forró fascismus or forró Nazi people. Nah, no, if you don't dance Itaúna's style, I don't dance with you. I don't want to know. I don't want to learn. And blah, 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 blah. And I don't believe that. I believe that if you want to learn how to dance, you have to take good classes. It doesn't. And I say that having met people that I consider amazing professionals, and they teach totally different than me in every single detail. And I believe that people have to take classes also with them because they're good. Mm-hmm. They are able to teach. So in my opinion, if you want to learn, you have to take classes with good teachers. It doesn't matter if they teach this or that. They are going to teach you how to dance, man. And the most important thing is that you integrate with people, that you dance with other people, and not that you build elite groups or level groups, which is also something that I do not believe in, levels, to dance just in those small elites. It's going totally against forró, and it's very possible that if we do like this, forró can sink in Europe. Forró can go down. Even if it's growing amazingly fast, it can also fastly go down if we keep on doing these things.
Okay, so the critique and the style problem is that people create a certain way of dancing and say this is right or this is the way it should be. But every person has its own style, right? I mean,
if we consider that way, every single person is a different style. So if you want to learn different styles in forró, you will have to learn with all the 30,000, 40,000 dancers that we have in forró.
That's how a lot of people learn. Like I watch people dancing and I say, oh, that's interesting, that's nice. And I sort of, you always integrate. I mean, you start from zero, you're a blank thing when you start dancing. So somewhere you need to get inspiration from. Most of the time they're obviously teachers, because you see them a lot dancing. Maybe a lot of people watch YouTube videos where you see people dancing, and obviously there and there you copy some things. You need to get your inspiration somehow. It doesn't mean that you repeat it exactly as they do, but you get your inspiration somewhere, right?
Yeah, the only remark I would like to make to you is when we start dancing forró, we don't start like a blank sheet. Né? We don't start from absolutely zero. Even if we never danced anything in our life, we never start from zero. Why? Dancing is coordination of motions, coordination of different motions, né? A combination, so to say, of coordinations. And this is body movement. This is moving the body. And we move the body since the moment we were born. Né? We walk in four, then we walk in two, and we have our activities, we have our job, and so on. So we are used to use our body somehow. And if we agree with body therapists like Alexander Technique or Rolfing or Anti-Gymnastic from Thérèse Bétherat, we will discover that we have a huge biography in our body, a huge memory in our body when we start dancing. So somehow I see people studying when they come to my classes, and it's very funny. I ask them, what do you do for a living? What is your job? Or I try to get to know them more, their lives. And when they tell me I do this, or I have studied for a long while that, I notice immediately this is the reason why the person has difficulties here. Mm-hmm. Because the body is used on a certain memory to do this. The body is used to have this specific posture and so on. So this is the reason why he has difficulties to have the arms in this position, or the upper part of the body in that position, or to be flexible here and so on. So we bring already a lot of material before we start dancing from our own life, from our own biography. And this influences and determines a lot what we are going to be able to do or not in our dance. Even if we do not believe it, the memory inside of our body is very strong. It's very strong, and the body is always telling us, hey, watch out, I'm here when we are doing things.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. Like if you have sometimes as well, if you... A lot of times you get motions or figures called teached in classes, and if you have done something similar already, your body already knows how to do this motion, so it's easier to adapt it to a different variation than if you start from zero.
Exactly.
Let's try get back to the workshop levels issue.
Mm-hmm.
We are organizing a festival here in Freiburg as well. We debate that every year again.
One of the most beloved ones, let's let people know, one of the most beautiful and friendly ones. I like a lot. It's always a pleasure and a proud to be part of it.
And you know, we have this discussion all the time, because I go to festivals. I try to put myself into a level, because you can't otherwise participate in any workshops normally.
Because the festivals are organized like this, you have to subscribe to a level.
Because the festivals are organized like this, and then you go to the level and you think, okay, it always depends as well on the classes, obviously. You can make classes where everyone can follow, but sometimes advanced class means you make a lot of figures and row them like one after the other, and then people just start to pass out after the whatever two or third part of the motion. And it's not working, let's be honest. People do whatever they want. They go to the teacher they want. They go and leave, move between levels. They don't give a shit. They don't care. So I'm really in favor of abolishing all the levels. But it's really hard as well here in our community, if we organize and say, okay, let's just get rid of the levels. And people say, no, but then you have complete beginners with people who dance like for 4 years already.
And you know what happens when that happens? They come to my classes, completely beginners with people that have been dancing for 4 years. And you know what happens? The beginner in specific exercises goes better than the ones that have been dancing for 4 years. Sometimes the ones that have been dancing for 4 years go much better in some exercises that I do than the beginners, the ones that have just started. But sometimes it doesn't happen. And what are you going to say? You dancing since 4 years go to the under beginners level, and you beginners come to the intermediate level. I don't believe it works like that.
But don't you think you need to change as well the way of teaching in the workshops if you abolish the levels?
Completely. Completely. But what does that demand? That teachers prepare themselves more. They start studying anatomy, physiology of the movement, physics of the movement, mechanics of the movement, biomechanics of the movement, their own dance, forró, that they start researching on what they do, that they start studying other dances to build up their own dance, that they go to dance schools to learn technique, to learn dance vocabulary, and so on, that they get interested by the story of the dance, not only by the forró history. And I don't know how interested the professionals are in doing that. I have met really few people who are interested in doing that, and few teachers or people who self-intitulate them teachers that have really studied the dance. And this is something that if you want to offer something different, not better, let's not talk about better, let's talk about different. If you want to change the way things are being organized, you have to prepare yourself. That's the only way. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. It's going to be a chaos. But I believe it's totally possible to change it and to put in festivals a different way of organizing. Me, myself, I have suggested many times to people that ask me or they say, how do you think the festival should be organized? I mean, we can talk about general festival organizations, but let's stick just to the classes and to the levels, because we are talking about that. Otherwise, it's going to be like 3 hours just to talk about how to do a festival, in my opinion. One of the ways that you can change that is people subscribe, and this is happening little by little now, even if I'm saying that since 5 years, this is happening little by little in festivals, like it happened in Paris and in Berlin this year. People subscribe to a teacher. That's over. You go to the festival, you subscribe to the teacher. You can only take the teacher's classes. You cannot enter in other classes. You will only take classes with this teacher. So this teacher will be able to work with you and your group in a more harmonic way. Everyone will be with him the whole weekend, taking maybe 2 or 3 classes a day. So in the end, you have more or less 6 to 9 classes with the same teacher. You can build something together. You can get to know better the way the teacher works, deeper, further, the way he works. And he also gets to know you and the group better. So you have a bigger integration. You have a bigger, so to say, relation, a stronger relation with the teacher, and you have the impression that in the end you have something, you have built something together. Because if you go to A here, B there, C there, one class with every teacher, different teacher at the festival, it doesn't matter if you are starting now or if you dance since 5 years, it will just go crazy. Because you go to A and he says, hold the hand here. You go to B and he says, no, it's wrong, you have to hold the hand here. You go to C and he says, you have to have the posture like this. You go to D and he says, no, it's the contrary, you have to have the posture like this. In the end of the festival, you are a schizophrenic dancer. You don't know what to do, you don't know how things work. You just got so many things, or sometimes thousands of figures, that doesn't explain you thing. I've been through that. Students, not of mine, came to me after a workshop and said, wow, we had a workshop now, it was nice. And I said, show me what you learned. And the student says, and he gets embarrassed and he cannot say. He really gets embarrassed and he cannot say. He cannot remember what he just saw. And my aim, when my students take my class, is that as soon as they leave the class, someone asks them, what did you study? And they say, we studied musicality. We studied posture. We studied embrace. Oh, nice. What did you study? We did this exercise, and this exercise. He corrected us on this, this, and this. He said that this, and this is important. And believe me, most of my students who come to my classes or to my workshops, they are able to do this after the class. Because the aim is that the person understands what's going on, understands what he is learning, and feels the effect on the body. A responsible teacher has to be clear in what he's saying, has to show what he is saying that he is doing, because many teachers say, now you put your foot forwards, and they go backwards. Now they say something, but they do something different with the body. He has to be able to answer your questions. If you have questions and doubts, he has to be able to answer, and not simply, I don't know. He has to do something that fits into you. That is, whenever you try what he's doing, you have to say, ah, that passes to me, that fits into me. It has logic. And then you took a good class. But this is not something that happens very often, in my opinion.
Yeah, I understand your point with having like one teacher and the students assigned to this teacher.
This is one possibility. You have others.
That's one possibility. And one disadvantage I would see in this concept, in this class, would be, or in this concept of a festival, is for me, a festival is a big opportunity. You have bands, you have loads of dancers from all over the places. You have loads of teachers as well. Teachers I don't normally get into contact with. So obviously, if you already have done 15 festivals, you have seen all the teachers, more or less. Like every year, some, whatever, 3, 4, 5 new teachers show up, but in the end, you know most of them. But still, especially for new people, it is extremely valuable, I think, to see how teachers dance, because that's the way you can get to know them. So in order to do, like if you would do it with all the participants, like you suggest, they would have to know already whom they're going to take classes with, and then they will just stick to them and they don't have the opportunity to do classes with others.
I have 2 things to tell you regarding that. First, if you are an absolute beginner and you don't know absolutely anything, I think it's a good advantage to take classes with only one and not being confused and having an idea on how to move in, than taking classes with 10. But then you can tell me, who should I choose? I don't believe people appear to a Forró festival like, I don't have a clue, I just want to go to the festival. You have always a friend, you have always someone you know, and you can always ask for tips. How does A work? How does B work? I'm a completely beginner, give me some tips, and so on. The problem is that I don't know if people always talk like that to ask for advice. And the second thing that I can say about that is, if you are already a dancer, if you already took some classes, if you already have an idea, you can more or less self-evaluate yourself if you are really honest to yourself, and you can already evaluate a little a teacher if you already took some classes. But if you cannot, you are a dancer that have been dancing for a few months and you don't have any clue, you can always ask your teacher. Your teacher can give you advices. My students, they are educated, so to say, to always ask for tips, to always consult not only me, they can also consult other teachers in which words they believe. Look, I'm interested in this and that, to whom should I go, blah blah blah. Normally, particularly, I indicate to my students to take classes with other teachers in festivals, not with me. If I'm teaching at the festival, I say, don't take classes with me, because you already take classes with me. Go and take classes with other teachers to see the way it works, but not whatever, not without rules, not chaotic. No, what do you want? What is your aim in the festival? What would you like to get? This, okay, so go to the teacher A, go to the teacher B, pay attention to the thematics as well. Maybe the thematics is good, but it's not the specialization of the teacher, because there are teachers nowadays doing, I don't know, combinations of turns, and the guy cannot turn. He's good doing something else. So it's not worth it to take classes with him if he's teaching combinations of turns, because he cannot do them. Or the guy is doing footwork, but he simply cannot do footwork. The other guy does better footwork. This one is better with musicality, so take musicality with him. I think there should be a bigger integration between students and teachers. Students among themselves talking to each other and consulting, and with teachers, and that people should really take into consideration what they listen. Because someone can listen to that and say, ah, he's saying whatever, I always talk to my friends. Okay, you always talk to your friends, and in the end, what do you do? What you want? So it doesn't help much. It's not really integrating. You listen to other people's opinion, but then you go home and you have the same opinion. You do not let yourself transform by what people say.
Yeah, okay. In the end, you don't need to decide as well if you do just one or just the other. I think in Berlin, they were doing both ways similar. Like they had one class which was doing with Ricardo and Juliana.
Ricardo and Juliana Braga had closed seminars, but they were also giving other classes where people were allowed to come.
Yeah, and people could just sign up for the normal classes, or they paid an extra and were doing the special class with Juliana and Ricardo. So, okay, you can mix that up. What would be one other thing you would say about
another possibility for a suggestion? Another possibility for a suggestion is the festival is going to be thematic. This is something that I always had in my mind as idea, and this is something that I really think it can work and people can really feel a difference. There is going to have a festival in, I don't know, whatever, in Mongolia. Which is the thematic of the festival? Musicality. All the teachers in all their workshops will take care of the subject musicality. Different ways of giving it, different ways of understanding it, the structure of the music, from the point of view of the instruments, from the point of view of the melody, of the general structure of the music, of the integration, of the embrace, of the breath. There are so many things you can do with musicality. Or the festival is going to be thematic embrace. Then no matter what you're doing, you are at least concentrating in one subject. So people will have a boost in that weekend in one subject. And if we get to get good teachers teaching good classes in that festival, people will feel a huge difference after this festival, much more than sometimes months taking classes or thousands of festivals in which they just do whatever without any rule. There are always disadvantages, like everything has advantages and disadvantages. But I think that it would be beneficial for the student. Another way of organizing a festival would be, okay, you want to have levels, there will be levels, no problem. But it's going to work like this. Teacher A is going to teach this level. Over. No one else is going to teach this level. Teacher A is teaching this level. You want to subscribe to this level? Okay, subscribe. You only take classes with Teacher A. And then Teacher A will be able to do in the whole weekend a work on that level, so to say, with that public, with that people, and so on. There are also these advantages, but I'm always considering from the point of view of the learning process for the student. We can always say, whenever you have a closed group on teacher, on level, or whatever, you don't have the opportunity to integrate with people, only with those 30, 40, 50 people in your class. Of course, it happens, but you have parties, you have free dancing, you have moments in which people are getting together on a garden like it happened in Munich, or in another room, or at the beach, or whatever, in other festivals. And this is a moment in which you can also integrate with other people and get to know other people. I mean, you don't have to go. This is an image that I believe people have from festivals, and I don't like that much. You don't have to go to a festival to get to know people, because you are investing money, man. Some festivals nowadays, they are demanding 150 euro from people. For forró, it's expensive. If we compare with other dances, it's not expensive. It's super cheap. But for forró is expensive, above all, because the public is a public of students in general. In forró, it's not an older public. But if you are demanding 150 euro for people, and if people want to pay that, they have to value their money. So many times, for example, I've been through situations in which I was teaching in a festival, and there was one person or one couple doing something different from what I was teaching. And I told them, man, you are wasting your money, because you paid somehow for me to be here. And so enjoy. Take profit of what we are doing here, because if you just come to dance because you want to dance with that girl and integrate with the girls and show them that you can dance so that in the evening they can dance with you at the party, you're just losing your money. You have many opportunities to do that in the evening. You know, try to learn something now because you paid for that. Otherwise, just take party passes. You know,
if they are, sometimes they are, party passes. Yeah, I believe sometimes you're as well really tired, you know, and then whatever. Yeah,
I believe particularly that this is only a personal observation. I would like festivals to only sell full passes, but this is a personal dream of mine, because I believe that a festival is a whole package. It's not I just go to dance because I think I already know, or I don't like the teachers, or blah 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 blah. I think that the festival is a complete integration, and it's culture, it's dance, it's music, it's history, it's party, it's maybe meeting the love of your life, and blah blah blah. It's not only I go to dance and so on, because it's also a matter of integration, respect for other people. You are investing, learning so much, trying to take good classes at the festival, and then comes one, I already know how to dance, I just came for the parties, and he does things that go totally against what you have been learning in the festival. So it's also a matter of understanding that when we go to a festival, there is much more than simply I listen to music and I dance.
I don't agree on that. I can see your point, but I think it is important to give people the opportunity to enjoy the concerts and the good parties there on festivals, because they are rare. Outside of festivals, it's hard to have these like good parties with big rooms, loads of people, loads of good dancers as well. You meet people you have been meeting before because you have been doing festivals for 4 or 5 years. And be honest, it's not that I'm not learning. Like me, for example, I'm going for a lot of party passes this year. It's not that I'm not learning in each class, but having, what was it? Oh, well, let's take the one festival I've been in February. There were 3 or 4 classes a day. 4 days long? And you know how they teach, like they give you different figures. How could I possibly remember 18 different figures after these 4 days? It's impossible.
This is the reason why I also think we have to change the methods, the way we are teaching. I totally understand you, and I totally respect this opinion, because many students of mine and many people that I know, many, it's not 1, 2, or 3, many people that I know, after 2 years of dancing, or some that have been dancing for a longer while, they tell me, nowadays I just go to festivals for party passes. I don't go for full passes anymore. And I say, why don't you go for full passes anymore? And 99% of the people, the answer that they give me is, because I want to learn how to dance. And I'm not learning how to dance in festivals, in workshops. They are just teaching figures and fooling people around. We are not learning how to dance, so I'm not going to pay for that anymore. I go to parties, I meet my friends, I dance, and I have fun. And I totally understand when people say that, because it's a matter of investment. You want to invest your money, and you want to get something good back. And this is the reason why I believe we should teach people to dance, and not to do figures.
Yeah, but I want to raise awareness as well to another part of the audience. There are dancers, and I include me in that, who are not really, like, I'm not really ambitious in being a very good dancer. Like, I could totally say, I have kind of fun at a party already. Like, I can enjoy myself dancing, and I think people who dance with me enjoy themselves as well. So, it might be okay. Now I'm in, maybe it changes again, but right now I could say I'm quite fine. Like, I like to take some once in a while some private classes with teachers I really respect, and then I will really learn something. But on the other times, I'm just having fun, and that's because it's not like I'm not gonna earn money with Fohon or anything like that. Like I try to enjoy myself, and I think that's totally fine. Like people should have the right to enjoy themselves, and absolutely, as well on festivals.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just think, particularly, that this does not exclude what I said, because you can have fun in festivals, you can enjoy yourself in festivals, you can connect and get to know people in festivals, also taking the classes.
Sure, but why should I pay three times as much money if I, for example, one other problem is you go to London to a festival and say, great, we're in London. But you're never going to see anything of London, because you're going to be all day in the workshops and at night at parties, and then you hardly get time to sleep and eat. So I totally understand. I would love to see the city. Let's see Amsterdam. Walk around, have fun during the day, and have fun at night. And then like it's totally, I can totally be fine with that. So I still cheer for party passes.
I think they are useful somehow, but it's always a matter of having a thermometer and a balance between, okay, I'm not interested in taking classes, but I'm also paying careful attention to my own situation. Something that my first tango teacher used to tell me when we were having classes was, people have to realize their own condition, their own situation. People have to realize in which condition they find themselves. Let's not talk about level, let's talk about condition. Because so many times, this is something that I have been talking to other teachers, and they told me it happens the same. So many times, people who have really, absolutely no clue on dancing have no idea how unfriendly with the music they are, how heavy they are, how much they hurt other people. They come and they invite the teacher to dance, or they invite someone who dances very, very well, very well, a great dancer. They invite this person to dance. I mean, let's not say that it's forbidden, but there are so many things happening in Fohó. There are so many etiquette elements, so many codes that I particularly respect, like religiously in Fohó, and I don't see many people respecting. I see sometimes that people are even selfish. I don't care. Maybe I even know that I'm a horrible dancer, that I'm heavy, that I hurt, that I just started and I have no idea of what Fohó is, but I heard that guy is amazing, that teacher is great, I'm going to invite him to dance. This is something that never ever happened in my life, and people never had to taught me that, to teach me that. And I learned alone, and then I noticed in other dances that that existed. Take care of your own situation, realize your own situation, and realize with who you can dance. Realize, you know, because there are people who really just, they don't care. They don't care. They just get close to you. You don't exchange eye look with them. You try to avoid seeing them. They get really close to you, and you show them that you are not looking at them. And still they come, they touch you, and they say, hey, 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 would you like to dance? I mean, it's a matter of body language. I don't look at you the whole evening. I have my back turned to the dance floor. Or I'm talking to someone else at the bar, not even caring about the dance floor. Or you invite me once, I say, yes, I dance one song, and thank you. I never invite you. You invite me again, I dance one song, thank you. You invite me again, one song, thank you. Man, I don't want to dance with you. Notice that. Pay attention to that. Don't be so selfish. Don't be so senseless. It's also a matter of becoming sensitive on the dance floor and paying attention to these kind of things, you know? Mm-hmm. Then I don't care. You can only go for party passes, but then you are sensitive. You are paying attention. You look at people and you see he's super interested. He's super in. He's investing a lot of money to study. This is something that I told to a girl, for example. I went to give workshops in a city, and she is dancing amazingly. Her boyfriend doesn't take classes. He only plays capoeira, but he goes to the parties with her. But the guy is an earthquake dancing. The guy is a killer dancing. And she came to me after the weekend of workshops, and she said, how can I improve my dance? And I had to be honest with her, because I cannot be different to people. I'm so transparent and so clear that sometimes people hate that. And I told her, you want to improve your dance? The first thing you have to do is stop dancing with your boyfriend. Keep up with him. Get married, have kids, whatever you want, but don't dance with him, because everything that you learn, he destroys when you're dancing. He just hurts you. He doesn't respect the musicality. He just do crazy things that do not have to do with what you're doing. I see your dance. I see what you are interested into. And it's totally different from what he wants. Maybe he doesn't even want anything. And she was a bit sad of that. I can say that she was even a bit angry on me. But I could not lie to her. This is one of the most important things. If you are investing so much on your dance, if you really want to progress, if you really want to become a great dancer, really, really great dancer, you have to protect your dance. You have to defend it. And one of the ways of protecting your dance is not dancing with people who destroy your dance. When you reach a position in which you are totally sure of your dance, no one can destroy it, no one can do anything to destroy it, and you are totally secure that you can defend yourself dancing with whoever, then you can maybe accept dancing with whoever, because they're not going to be able to poison your dance anymore, to destroy it anymore, to make you unlearn something that you have already learned, to be prejudicial to your dance. Then you can do it. But previously, I don't see any sense.
Let's move on to another sensibility topic.
Yes.
Even though we have already talked for more than 1 hour, we could still have a lot of on our list, I think, and we could continue for a lot of time more, but we have a limited amount of time. But talking about sensibility and as well musicality, you were mentioning it already quite some time. We've been talking about what characterizes Fauxhawk dance and have come up with some ideas. Let's get into the music part. Mm-hmm. We had, obviously, when you start with Fauxhawk, you are not really, you don't know what actually it means, what is actually Fauxhawk, what is the basic rhythms and what's not. Like, for example, for me, I started to get to know a little bit about Brazil and Brazilian music within that when I went there the first time, 2012. But still, it's hard to define what is now Fauxhawk, what are the different rhythms in Fauxhawk, and then what is, like, for example, a lot of musicians, Alceu Valença, he plays a lot of Fauxhawk, but he plays a lot of different other stuff. Gilberto Gil, a lot of people play different styles of music. So where would you see which music is still acceptable in a Fauxhawk party and which is not? A lot of samba is played in Fauxhawk as well. A lot of MPB, which is not necessarily a Fauxhawk rhythm. But where do you draw the line? What is Fauxhawk music?
I believe that Fauxhawk music has its characteristics with its consacred elements. Nowadays we have like reference that Fauxhawk is triangulo, sanfona, and zabumba. But this is not the origin. In the origins, we didn't have triangulo and zabumba, for example. There was a time in which Fauxhawk had a lot of pandeiro, oboé, and so on.
What's oboé?
Oboé, it's like the tuba.
Okay.
And other instruments as well. And the triangulo and zabumba were not there. Maybe the sanfona is since the beginning. So even in the characteristic of the music, you changed in time which are the instruments. But considering that we have nowadays the basic instruments, the reference instruments, sanfona, triangulo, and zabumba, we can say that whenever you are playing Northeastern music with sanfona, triangulo, and zabumba, you are doing something like Fauxhawk. You are doing something in that direction. Of course, you can use them to play something different. But in general, when people are using these basic instruments that belong to the Fauxhawk, they are trying to play in the direction of Fauxhawk. But we can also not limit to that, because nowadays, since a few years, this was a dream of mine since ever, and since a few years we are seeing this dream coming true. We have Fauxhawk orchestras. Orchestras with piano, violin, cello, and so on, playing Fauxhawk. And they are also playing Fauxhawk. So from the instrumental point of view, it becomes nowadays difficult, at least, to define. This is Fauxhawk and this is not Fauxhawk. It's also a matter of identification on the ear. It's a matter of a Brazilian listening to something and say, ah, this belongs to Fauxhawk. You identify it immediately as Fauxhawk music. It's also a matter of the artists. There are artists that are consecrated and they are known for belonging to Fauxhawk. So whatever they are doing, for example, Alceu Valença, he is known as, in the middle of the Fauxhawzeiros, as a Fauxhawk artist. So whatever he is playing, people say it's Fauxhawk. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes he does jazz or something in that direction. But what is the point for me? The point is that whenever you listen to something and this something somehow passes to the structure of the music of forró, to the way of balancing, of moving, to the atmosphere of the forró, and it's possible to dance according to the things that we learn in forró, I think it's legitimate to put it on a forró party.
As well, foreign music, like for example, I remember on my first festival, one of the festivals in Stuttgart, they were playing Seed, I think Denzel Caballero or something, and I think Pablo was playing Triangle to it. And what do you say about that? That fits?
I believe that Europe is playing a very important role in forró now because they are bringing things that belong to their culture and that we in Brazil would maybe never dream of it, or maybe it would happen in many, many, many years, which is exactly this integration of other musics, other genres sometimes into forró. The only thing that I consider important is to have taste on that. And it's difficult because it's a matter of judgment. Sometimes yeah. I listen to things in festivals and I say, this guy just ruined the night. He wanted to show much that he's good, that he knows, that he introduces new things, that he puts things, and he ruins the night. If you want to introduce things, you always have to do first, little by little, not a whole night in a very important festival in the most important night. Second, you have to understand that it's a forró festival, so you have to concentrate your energy on forró. And on forró, let's be a bit structured now, a bit closed. The traditional stuff, the basic stuff, né? Tradition, when I'm saying tradition here, I'm not saying only Luiz Gonzaga. I'm saying also Rastapé and Fala Mansa, because they are really, really forró bands. This is what I'm calling traditional stuff. Forró bands. And then you can play one international artist, one song sung in Russian, Finnish, German, French, Italian, or whatever. Or one song that it's not forró, it's sang in another idiom, but maybe passes to the musicality, to the vibration of the party, to the stimuli, to the atmosphere, and so on, to the balance of forró. But not one after the other, many, 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 because then you break a little bit with the atmosphere. But as I told you the whole time, it's a matter of taste, and taste is something that you're always going to discuss. There is a guy that is going to listen to a specific DJ. He's going to do that I told you, ruin the night, but the person is going to say, amazing, I just loved it. What are you going to do then? You can start a discussion. Okay, you try to fundament your arguments, he tries to fundament his arguments. But my experience says that in most of times he's going to go home thinking the same, you're going to go home thinking the same. People do not allow themselves to be transformed by a conversation. So
maybe the basis for transformation is laid in a conversation.
I believe so, totally. Yeah.
So what, for example, we had discussions here saying, should we invite DJs from outside? That is something which started like just the last 2 years. We started to invite DJs. Before, we were just playing the same fucking folder we always had, random, and which happens a lot in other cities still. Because people, it takes time to really research on forró and choose songs and figure out how you manage your songs, which software you're using to good DJing and stuff. So,
getting in touch with the people on the dance floor, seeing their reaction to see what mood you have to put.
Yeah, and can react to that as well. Like first is recognizing what is going on and then have the repertoire to see, okay, what should I play now?
Exactly.
So, yeah, what would you say if someone says, well, I don't care. It's like put the playlist on random, on shuffle, and just have fun. What's all this fuss about? Why should we spend money on DJs?
If the person says that, just put a playlist random and go to the dance floor and enjoy. The only thing that I will say is let's pray that this playlist has a good taste and has different balances. Because one thing that I also don't like when the DJ says, no, we have to DJ and we have to be roots and we have to play just this or just that and so on, is that people become boring. You go to the whole festival and they play the nice songs, but it's always the same. There is no undulation. You don't play with people. You don't change the atmosphere. You don't change the energy. You don't change the quality of your playing. You know, sometimes I go to festivals and good musics are being played. Sometimes they are even stick to the classics. But people come to me, and not people that do not understand anything, people that understand something. And they say, man, seems like they are playing the same song for 1 hour and a half. because it doesn't change the mood. Mm-hmm. Even if he's playing good, traditional, blah, 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 it doesn't change the mood. And this is something that you have to do. You have to change the mood. Sometimes you suggest to the dance floor to change their mood, and sometimes you answer to the dance floor. The dance floor shows you something and you say, "May, I cannot play a shashado now. It's impossible. I have to go slower because I see how people are reacting. You know, I want to put a galope to make people get agitated. Okay, but let's not put a galope at 4 a.m. when people are already dying because they took classes the whole day in the festival and have been dancing since 6 hours. This kind of stuff, you know. That's the only thing I would say. If the guy just puts a playlist randomly, I would pray that the playlist has some sense and plays a little bit with that. Because something that some festivals have been doing, and I think it's very important, is DJ courses for people who are interested in doing music, in playing in their own city or whatever. You don't have to become a professional DJ, but if you're interested in once in a while playing, you have to take those classes. And I do not believe it's just a matter of taste. I heard people already saying that DJ classes are useless. It's just a matter of taste. I play what I want. But well, then play for yourself at home. Put in your iPad and listen, but not to 300, 400, 500 people. It's not what you want.
But have you participated in DJ classes on the festivals?
Unfortunately, I could never take a DJ class in a festivals and in a festival, and I would love to have the opportunity. Either if I'm teaching in the festival or not, I would like to have the opportunity to take a class to see how they teach, to see how they present the thing. Because I have my own ideas on how a DJ workshop has to be, what are the subjects we have to cover, and what we have to do with people. But I don't know how the others are working.
Because that's the point. Like, I have attended one DJ course because I was very interested in it as well. I was like, okay, great, something different, finally. And it was sort of not really disappointing, but there was not so much new things. Like, he talked a little bit about different music styles. He explained a little bit about technology, like what is the 44.1 hertz and what is beats per minute and what is the velocity of music with which software you could play and stuff. I mean, the software was sort of pointless for me because I'm using Linux and it was a software just running on Windows or Mac, I don't know. But it was not a choice for me anyway. It was, I think it was even a software which was sort of professional. You had to pay quite a bit of money on it, and I already have my software I can work with. So I was a little bit disappointed from that past class. So what would, if you say you already have a concrete idea about music workshop, what would be a decent music workshop? If we say to you, we have 1 hour of 1.5 hours, 90 minutes, musicality workshop, no, DJ workshop. Mm-hmm. What is important for a new person bringing Fohar to their city and organizing parties and putting music there?
Mm-hmm. I would say you have to pay a careful attention on how you start. How do you begin? When you begin, you are presenting yourself. You are showing already, this is my face. This is more or less the way I'm going to go. So you have to be careful on the way you begin. Another thing that I would say that it's very... I'm just going to point them, and then if you want, we can talk about each point. Another thing that I would say it's very important is when you want to do a passage from one song to the other, two things are very important. The way you change from one song to the other, in order not to be boring, not to be hurting for the ears, not to bother people dancing and so on, because the DJ, he's playing for the dancers. He's not playing for himself. I'm sorry, DJs who play for yourselves, who are selfish, I have to tell you, you are playing for the people, not for yourself, for your own taste, to show that you know a lot and that you have good music. You're playing for them. I would take care of this, the passage, but also what I'm changing to. If you are playing...
But the passage, let's take that.
Taking care not to change from one song that has a characteristic in its ends to another one that is just going to run over it.
Okay, going to fade one into the other, or you're going to have one ending and then start the other?
You can have both cases. Important is, if you finish one and play the other, that they are more or less quickly connected to avoid those 3 seconds of silence. This is something that I don't like much.
And people value really in Europe sometimes. Sometimes they complain that one is going into the other.
I know, because they wanted to change partners. Yeah. Because in Europe, for how was taught, you dance one or two and bye-bye. And in Brazil is you dance half an hour, 1 hour, and maybe bye-bye. This is something that's changed.
The whole night.
This is something that's changed in the way for how was sold in Europe, unfortunately. And you can also fade out and then fade in. It's also a possibility. You can also not fade out and not fade in. You get the last beats of one song and builds with another one. But you have to see if they pass. But not only that. It's very important that, if you want to change from a very old, traditional, with old instruments.
Old recording from vinyl
and so on. To Fala Mansa. That you put, build a bridge, man.
Put some Aula de Adeus where Luiz Gonzaga sings in the beginning.
Put some three or four songs between that, like to build a bridge between something so old and something so modern and with another quality of recording, so that you have a difference, né, between them, but slowly...
Yeah, transition.
Slowly transitioned into something different and not simply jumping. Something that I also try to avoid is to... play much with the ages all the time. I like to play blocks of traditional old stuff, then blocks of something more modern, then blocks of something more traditional or something in between the old tradition and the very new ones.
What would be one block? Like 4 music, 2?
No,
six,
one
eight,
one block
ten.
For me, it's like at least half an hour.
Okay.
At least half an hour. Or sometimes what I do simply, I did already for you in Mamita, is I play just the classics in one night. Or I play just modern. Or I mix them, but try to mix them in a good taste, in a way it's not offending to people, you know. Also, something that I do not like is when people play randomly the 4 main rhythms in a forró party. Xote, xaxado, baião and galope. You play one xote, then one xaxado, then 2 baiões, and so on. No, if you started with a mood, let people enjoy a little bit that mood, because maybe that guy invited that girl because he likes dancing xote with her. Maybe that girl invited that guy because they like to dance xaxado together, it fits together. So don't play one. Play a little, then we can make a small block of 4 or 5 songs, and then you change a little bit the mood. Né? But not simply play whatever because it's good. Because as I said, you can play good songs the whole evening, but they are so badly mixed that in the end, you didn't do a good work. You played something that didn't please people. People felt the musics were good, but somehow... there was something missing, you know? Another thing it's important to consider when you are DJing in a party or a festival or whatever is how you want to introduce people new things. If you want to introduce people new things, because in general or until... at least until 2014-15, people were used to a specific way of DJing and to a specific playlist. If you want to introduce new things, we were talking about that half an hour ago, go slowly, take it easy. I mean, take care of people. Little by little, one song here, one song there, very well chosen, that really fit into what you're doing, but not, I'm going to show them that they don't know anything about forró. I'm going to play the good ones. And then you play 2 hours of absolutely crazy stuff that no one knows, or that you want to show that they fit into forró, they belong to other rhythms or whatever. And you simply destroy the evening. You simply ruin, because you are always thinking about yourself. You're always forgetting people. Mm. Always forgetting people. And you're only thinking about yourself. Another point for me is the way you close the evening. For example, you asked me to DJ, I think it was on the first or second marathon that we organized in Freiburg. And I told you, let's try to make a mission. Let's try to make people dance until 6, 7, 8 a.m. And I tried to DJ, and at 6 something a.m., almost 7, people had to come to me and say, please, Rafael, stop. We cannot anymore. We cannot anymore. The music is amazing. We love it, but we cannot dance anymore. My aim that night was not to show that I'm good. My aim that night is I want to make people dance until they die, until they cannot anymore. So I'm going to play to please them, to take care of them, to see if they get into it. And what happened? When I noticed that we were like... 4 a.m., people were starting to load the energy, to load the atmosphere. They were starting like to feel the tyrants in their bodies. I said, let's go slowly. Let's make a huge block of shochi. And I played almost 45 minutes of slow songs. It's not that I want people to hook up. They can. It's their problem. I mean, I don't care. But I'm also understanding that it's time to cool down. You cannot finish a party. You cannot DJ until 6 a.m. and from 5 to 6 you play Chachado and Galope. It's just like you don't care about people. You don't give a damn to them. You have to have the sensibility as well. So I would go more in these directions in a Forró workshop, you know, how to interact with the dance floor and how to build something that it's good for people. I mean, it's simple somehow. But if it would be so easy as it seems, we would have always amazing nights when people are DJing. And this is something that we do not have. The things that I face the most in parties and festivals is a horrible musicality. And I'm always like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. It's really like destroys your atmosphere, your energy. It can really put you down. And this is something we have to take care of. We have to put people up. Forró is about a bit of joy as well. Now, you have also the sadness, the romantic and the melodical stuff, but it's also a bit about joy. Let's put the energy up.
Yeah. So, yeah, the musicality is is quite important as well for the dancing, and obviously it is crucial for having a good party, but the tastes are so different, still so different. So I wonder if there is a way to communicate more while doing a DJ, because if you have prepared yourself really well, you know a lot about the music you choose, you know why you're choosing them, but it's impossible to spread information while you're DJing, other than someone is standing next to you and asks you stuff and you talk about it. Is there any way you could think of people could communicate better about, make an understanding for dancers that this is a that there's a logic in this DJing and there's a logic why I choose certain songs? Because for some people it just seems so random that they don't see any value in it. I mean, whatever, putting up screens or announcing it beforehand, you're going to play that and that and that, so people can understand already what they can expect on the party. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
It's very difficult because for me it's all about energy, atmosphere, and so on. And it's very difficult to put it into words. I start the evening presenting myself, putting what I believe it's like the elementor of Forró. I like a lot to start my evenings with Luis Gonzaga, particularly. I try to always get some baiãos and some shots to start the evening. In general, almost every single night of mine starts like this, or with Dominguinhos, also with baião, and so on. But from that moment on, I only pay attention to people. I never come with a playlist and I say, I'm going to play that. The maximum that can happen is I choose an amount of songs and I say, I would like to stay in this area tonight. But then I pay attention to the dance floor and I'm playing according to the dance floor. It's not ready. I'm choosing and changing the order of what I organized all the time, paying attention to the dance floor's reaction and not simply to what I have prepared. But it's always absolutely energetical and from the atmosphere point of view. It's difficult to say. I would have to have someone in my side the whole evening, like we are doing today, an interview, and I would be saying, now I'm playing this because of that. Now I'm playing this because of that, because there is always a reason when I'm playing. I'm playing this because of something. But it's normally related to the energy of the dance floor and the atmosphere, and the energy and the atmosphere that I want to impress as well, that I want to show people, that I want to lead them a little. It's like dancing. Sometimes I lead them, sometimes I let them lead me. Nah, it's game.
It's a dialogue as well, sort of.
And the good balance in this dialogue is what I think constitutes a good Forró evening. I cannot give you formulas on this is the way of doing a good DJing, because I think it's possible to do a good DJing playing so different stuff. You don't have to get stuck to I'm going to play just 50s and 60s, Luis Gonzaga and the traditionals, or I'm going to play just modern to show people that they don't know anything and we can dance to many things or whatever, you know. I think it's possible to use them all to make good music.
Yeah, for that you need to know all your repertoire, you need to know music, that needs a lot of study.
I'm sorry, my friend, listen to music all the time, listen to music without stopping, Download the whole discography of a composer and listen to everything. Compare with other composers, see in which time that was built. Pay attention to the instruments that are the main ones in that song. Pay attention to the lyrics, because sometimes they are saying things that are similar to other lyrics.
And that is difficult for a lot of DJs in Europe.
I know.
That's even difficult. Like, that's difficult for me, and I speak some Portuguese. I actually need to get the letters most of the time.
You know, but this is the way. I mean, it's not without hard work. It's not just I have some 500 songs and I play them.
Just
no.
Throw them out. Yeah.
You know?
Okay, we are getting to the end of the program, more or less, but let's try to finish up with some visions, with some perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Fauxhan in Europe is not such an old thing. Let's say in the last 8 or 10 years, it actually got more or less to Europe and got bigger. In the last 4 years, you said we had a multiplication of amounts of festivals and so on. What do you think where Fauxhan is going to be in, let's say, 5 years? Or what would you like it to be? Oh, let's put it two questions. Where you think it's going to be and where would you like it to be?
If we work well, professionally, and try to really improve as organizers, DJs, teachers, and everyone who is responsible for selling the image of Fauxhan in Europe, from the growing that I have seen in the last years with all the problems that we have, if we improve in that area, I see Fauxhan in 5-7 years as the biggest and most popular dance in Europe. I really see it like this. But we have to do something. It's not simply let it be. It's going to become like that. Then you're asking me about, then I'm telling you at the same time what I believe and my ideals, my dreams, what I would like to see. But there are conditions for that. We have to work well. We cannot keep on doing just like the way it is, because it's just chaotic, amateur, irresponsible, and whatever. We have to change it. And then we are going to have that. The other perspective, the real perspective, not considering my dreams, is if things keep on going like the way they are, we are going to have either stop in the growth, and we are going to have just these people, a small public, dancing, interested, and still involved with Fauxhan, but no growth. Or even worse, people will start abandoning, because they get sick of it. And I know many people who are already sick of it. They still go because, as we said in the beginning, Fauxhan is an addiction. They have friends and they really have joy when they are dancing. But it's just because of that. Fauxhan is not in their plans anymore. It's not like because I love Fauxhan. It's because they like to dance, they like to meet their friends, and they have the opportunity to travel to beautiful places to meet their friends. And this is where I think Fauxhan will be in 5 years if we keep on doing like this. Such in an amateur way, so disrespectful to the public, so unattentive, so unaware, so, I mean, Fauxhan for me. For my own power, for my own money, for my own interests, for my own development, and not for the people, then I think we will have problems in having a good, established, built Fauxhan scene in Europe and to become such a popular dance like other dances.
Hearing that, I stumble upon your phrases, amateur or professional. We have been talking about prices of festivals already. I know calculations of festivals because I'm organizing one. If we are like it, first I have to say it's not a correlation between having expensive festivals and good quality. That's not a correlation.
Not at all.
But having said that, I think it is quite unlikely to have high quality festivals on a long term running without any financial compensation for the people. People do that because they're passionate for a few years. It's a lot of work to organize a festival. It's a lot of work. And if you want to have it, if you want to get it done well, and you want to have it professional, I think the prices might tend, the tendency will go up a little bit. Because, it's also informal. Like, people, it's all done the cheapest way possible. Like, you make yourself a lot of more work if you try to organize everything by your own. You organize your own food, you cook your own food, you host people at the other people's places, and that's all like to cost, to break costs down. But there might be a need for changing as well in this attitude. If you want a professional festival, I think it should. There will be an impact as well on the prices.
Of course, there will be an impact on the prices, but as long as you offer people good quality, they will pay for it. That's simple. They will pay for it. It's not that the people that are going to festivals are miserable and this is the reason why they are complaining. They complain because they are paying 150 euro, because they arrive to the festival and the dance floor, one of the most important things, is horrible. The acoustics of the place people choose to do the parties, which is one of the most important things, is horrible. The ventilation, so that people don't sweat like dogs, is horrible. The dance classes are what we were saying previously, just figures, irresponsible, whatever, not coordinated, not correlated. The plan is not made for the students, for the festivals. Teachers do not integrate to plan the schedule for the festival. So, of course, people will complain. You can charge them 20 euro and they will complain because they are paying for something and they are not getting. So, of course, when they pay for a festival 150 euro, 140 euro, 145 euro, and they get these things that I'm mentioning to you, they complain. They say it's too expensive. I don't like it. I don't want to pay anymore. But try to offer them top classes, top locations, quality to the top. And charge them 200 euro for a festival, you're going to see that they're going to pay for it. They are going to pay for it. And not only that, you can charge what you charge now already. Because I tell you something, maybe it doesn't happen in Freiburg, but in many festivals in Europe, people make money out of the festival. They make money. So you arrive at the end of the festival and they have a positive balance, a good positive balance. And then I say, why out of this balance you don't pay 50 or 100 euro more for each class that each teacher gave? 50 or 100 euro more for every night that the DJ DJed. 100 or 200 euro more for each band that played. People will be already happier because they are the professionals doing the festivals. And if you keep on paying them so badly, they are going to keep on doing bad work. It's a two-hand stuff. You pay badly, they do bad work. But on the other hand, a friend of mine, a professional, he told me once, with such low quality, Rafael, you have to pay few. So it's a double way stuff. One, we have to start. Either you start offering more quality in your work and demanding more money from that, or you start paying people better so that they raise the quality. But otherwise, I don't see a way out for that. I just see people doing still the same. We try to find the cheapest locations, we pay the teachers the less we can, and the festival is going to work. And people will keep on complaining. This is what's going to happen.
Let's try not to finish on that sort of bad mood thing. We have to round up now, but do you have anything to share for the end of the interview with our audience, or could we just close in?
The only thing I have to say is remember that forró is much more than going to a party and dancing. There is much more. There is history, there is culture, there is love. There is a dance that has to be studied. There is a music that has to be appreciated. And there are human beings that you are going to meet when you go to a forró party, festival, marathon, meeting, Wochenende, whatever. So value that. When you invite someone to dance and this person says yes, value that the person is giving the next 3 minutes of her life to you. And understand that has a lot of value. Don't simply treat it like nothing. Don't simply treat it like, you don't want to dance, I invite the next one. No, value the fact that we have something very beautiful happening in Europe, that we have a very beautiful culture and a very attractive and beautiful dance that it's conquering everyone, and dive into it. Deep inside, follow it deep inside, jump on it, and make out of that a passion, almost an obsession on your life. And then you are going to discover that forró has another taste. It's not simply a gymnastic that you do on weekends.
Thanks a lot for your thoughts, Rafa.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And I think this will be heard quite a lot, and we'll see how the reactions are. I'm really curious about our audience. And yeah, if you have feedback for us, you can send it to the Facebook page, Forozin Noir, or Forozin Freiburg. We have enough contacts on the website, and we're going to share it with Rafael, obviously. So thanks a lot for being here, and we're going to play some music to finish the program.
Thank you very much. Congratulations for the initiative.